The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Russell Wilson, you make our dreams come true.
That could work.
Not bad. No,
it's not bad. Oh, yeah, baby. Kristen's op-ed for Reed. Yes, the break is done. We're back, baby. And, I mean, wow, that was some beautiful singing by you. I could have done without that, yeah. You know, us getting introduced back to each other here. But what's up, man? How you doing?
Yeah, welcome back. Listen to me sing. A little out of tune, and I don't even know what I was doing. It's awesome to see you again. I know for you, Chris, that you one day off for you is like a little too much. Like, you're a workaholic. I don't know if people know that about you, but 3 weeks off, it had to be brutal for you.
Well, it was brutal, but it was awesome too. Like, I don't know, like, you know, at first I'm a little like, oh, I can't relax. I don't know what to do with myself. And then I got to about day 10 and I felt like I hit a real nice stride. I really did. Now, I had to like pull back the reins a little lately, like wee horsey, because, you know, I've been drinking too much and smoking too many daddy cigars. And then I work out hard every day. And I was like, I had a few mornings where I got up and I was like, man, I feel like I'm exhausted. Like, I honestly didn't feel well last weekend, and I really think it was just me going too hard in all aspects of life. So I have a little issue with that. That's why I need work. It'll stop me from doing that crazy stuff.
I was going to say, you lost a couple pounds, didn't you? This 3 weeks, I feel like you've slimmed down.
I don't,
just a little bit, maybe.
Well,
have you?
I got a haircut, so I'm...
Oh, maybe that was it.
I'm high in...
Did you work out? No, I just cut my hair off.
But I have worked out hard.
Good, good. And I'll be honest with you, like, quarantine, and it's not relatable that much because everyone's talking about how they, you know, gained the 15 pounds in quarantine. The last couple of months, I've done the same thing. I've, for the first time in like a year, I swear to God, I did not work out at all. Like, I did not do any cardio, no weights for a whole year since I moved to Connecticut. So these last 2 months, I've been like, God, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. So I've done it and I've actually worked out and I'm feeling pretty good. And I got a haircut. And so it's like, I got the double trouble right there. So I'm feeling pretty good, Chris.
Oh, you're a double threat. You are scary. I mean, you are just, woo. I mean, sexy is just dripping off you. So,
okay, let's move on. Let's move on. All right, let's move on then.
All right. You want to get into it? You want to move on? Okay. All right.
Well,
we got
yeah.
some good stuff today. First off, we got to let everybody know, right? We're back Monday and Monday. We'll be back. Our new pod schedule here going forward is going to be Monday, Thursday. I know you and me are together, right? I don't know if you'll be in the office, but I am going into the office on Monday for the first time. And I'm very excited for that, big time. So that'll be the new schedule going forward as far as that's concerned. And then we got some big topics to hit on today. Go ahead, run through the list. Let's hear what we got.
So you took, it was like we were waiting for things to happen the whole time you were here, and you take 3 weeks off and everything happens. Cam Newton goes to the Patriots. Patrick Mahomes signs a $500 million contract. We got a name change with that Washington football team in D.C. So we're going to hit all those. We've got a ton of really creative questions from the homies because they've been chomping at the bit to get some your way. So we're going to cover all that in an AMA type podcast today. And I'm going to start with a tweet from at Sims Homies. Chris, we have a place where all the homies can coalesce now. It was started by CJ DeTruth.
Yeah.
Who is Corey, who types us from time to time, tweets us often. He goes, homies are ready. Chris, to start it off, let's get personal. How was your hiatus? Did you spend quality time with the missus? Did you play Xbox with Philip? Did you get hit by another wiffle ball? And of course, I assume you enjoyed a couple daddy cigars. Happy to have you back, bud. You've already answered the daddy cigars part of it. What about the rest of it?
Well, first off, I mean, major props to CJ DeTruth. I mean, yes. What? Come on. That's like, this is to me one of the greatest honors of my career to this point, as far as in the media business. I really am. And, you know, I saw a few of his comments where he's like, I mean, Florio's got the PFTM, the PFT yeah. posse. And he goes, you're way cooler than him. So I got to have something. And I would agree with that on all accounts. So.
I don't know if he said, in his defense, I don't know that he did drop that you're way cooler than him, but he may have thought it.
Okay, good. I like to think it either way.
Yeah.
But it was a good break. I mean, a lot of cornhole, a lot of in the pool, a lot of wife time. Yes. I think my wife was a little sick of me after the first week, but then I've broken her in. So now we're in a good groove and no more wiffle ball. We didn't do any wiffle ball. It's been a few weeks. But yeah, I think that covered it all. And no Xbox either. I've been outside. Like, my little boy can play his Xbox and play Fortnite and all that. But I didn't get involved in any of it. I really, like, I don't know how you feel this time of the year. I try to be outside a lot. I feel guilty when I'm inside on a nice day.
It's the biggest upset of the whole quarantine for me is that I've played very little video games. I would never have guessed that would have happened, but it's the same thing. I've been outside. I've been in my backyard trying to enjoy some of the sun, some of this good weather. Right. Same thing. So then we did get a tweet, Chris, from PFT PM Posse, and they go, what did Fareed do during the hiatus from Unbutton? So I do appreciate the question from PFT PM Posse. And basically that I was outside playing with my kids, didn't do much traveling. I have been going into the office the last couple of weeks here for some horse racing and Premier League. And I will warn you, Chris, I mean, the good thing about NBC is they've been super careful this whole time, obviously, by you being at home for so many months and me doing it from home as well. And so when you go into the building now and they're gradually phasing that in, everyone's got masks on. We're keeping distance from everyone. It's like a totally different world. It's so strange, but I guess it's what we have to do before we get back to normal life, whenever that's
going
to be.
Well, we got to do it. I mean, do we want the world to go back to normal? Do we want the economy to be normal? Do we want to watch football this year? I mean,
yes.
Hey, I'm scared of all of these things right now. I mean, we're seeing other countries are playing sports right now. Why is that? Because they did the proper things as far as lockdown, you know, social distancing, masks. So I'm scared right now just from a pure football standpoint, whether we're going to have the NFL. And I'll say this right off the bat, because I know we're going to dive into some of these conversations. I just don't think that the NFL season will start on time. That's one thing right now. And it's disappointing. I'm disappointed in us as a country right now and where we're at in this pandemic and how we've handled it. And it's going to affect all of us, of course. We know that. And it's certainly going to affect my great love, other than my family, which is football. And I want to see that this time of the year. I'm starting to get the feel. The vibe is coming around the corner, and I'm just not sure it is around the corner with the way everything is right now.
I've always thought of it this way, Chris, is that, you know, the timing for the NFL was good, right? Because their season had just finished up. They were able to go through their offseason program pretty much as usual, as normal, didn't have the in-person physicals and stuff like that. So there was a little weirdness, but for the most part, the timing was pretty good for the NFL. They've had a lot of months to figure out a plan on how to execute a season. I've always been optimistic, Chris, because I feel like, okay, you play once a week. There's a way that you can maybe test everyone on a Thursday, test them again on a Saturday, and make sure that when you go to battle on a Sunday, that everyone has tested negative for coronavirus. It is difficult in that the sport is 100% physical and you're exchanging blood and sweat and all that stuff. So that's not great for football, but I've always been optimistic that they can figure out a plan. But it's curious hearing you think that they might not be ready to go week one.
Well, no. I mean, I don't think that they're going to be ready to week one. First off, I don't even know if it's realistic to be asking NFL players to be ready for week one, all right? We talk about player safety a lot, right? And hey, I can tell you, first off, there's a few things. You know, hey, I know guys have been at home training and doing things like that. They're not going to be as in physically good shape as they would have been if they were there at OTAs practicing football, having a trainer looking over them, competition with other teammates on a daily basis when you're going through the different training exercises and all of those things, right? So to me, from just a pure player standpoint, Ahmed, I would say I think the NFL should take it slow from that standpoint. Like the first 3 weeks, let's get back and let's just get in shape. A lot of walkthroughs, but a lot of training, lifting weights, running, doing things like that. Then maybe a week or two of practice with no pads, just helmets, right? Like an OTAs more or less. And then slowly start to put the pads on. But the one thing I could say is I was a workaholic. I worked out as hard as it could be. It doesn't matter. When there's just nothing that can get you into shape other than practicing football and playing football for football type shape is what I'm saying. And the other thing too, we have to be aware of, we're in the era of player safety. Okay, well, the last time we didn't have an offseason, go back and look at the injury rates in 2011 with those, you know, with the CBA dispute. I believe injuries were up 25 to 30% that year. Well, that's why. Because guys got into training camp and were never in shape, and it started to have a lot of issues. I'm sorry if you can hear the lawnmower out the window here, but that's what I worry about. And then last thing, Ahmed, too, to like what you're, you know, I think the big thing is, I think the NFL and the people I know in high up positions, yeah, they're confident that we could play some football, certainly. What they're, I think, most optimistic about is they think they can kind of like our country or the hospitals, not overburden their football teams with a lot of cases of coronavirus. I think a lot of teams think if we just have like three or four guys a week, we'll be able to make this happen and we won't have to shut down our team or a game or a season. And I think that's the big thing, to just not let it run rampant through teams. If it's just like two or three guys a week, I think they'll just go next guy up, we'll manage it and let's go. And I think that's what they're hoping for, more or less.
Everyone keeping their fingers crossed that we can figure it out and that we can get over the hump and that there's some therapeutics and eventually down the line a vaccine. But you're right. It just doesn't seem like throughout the entirety of 2020, we're going to get to a spot where we're not going to have any trouble. And we're fooling ourselves if we're thinking that it's going to go super smoothly. Let's do Cam to the Pats. You ready for that? Because we got a lot of questions about Cam Newton to the Patriots, a team that I think you mentioned a lot of times that would be a potential good fit for Cam Newton. This one comes from Coach Gray, or maybe it's Coach Grav. He goes, do you think there's any doubt that Cam will be the starter? Are the Pats AFC East favorites? Could this potentially be the best coaching season of Bill's career? So a lot to get into there. What about the first part of it? Will Cam be the starter? Are you certain of that?
No, I'm not. All right. So here's my just first blanket statement, right, on Cam Newton. To me, this is like one of the ultimate boom or bust moves in the history of the NFL right here. That's how I look at it. I do. I could see Cam Newton and the New England Patriots in the AFC Championship game. I can. I wouldn't be shocked. You know, first off, and I'll get into this in more detail, I think the team is actually built better for a guy like Cam Newton to be the quarterback rather than a guy like Tom Brady. I really do. Defense, offensive line, a lot of versatile wide receivers, things like that. So they can have, they're built to run the Cam Newton offense and play Cam Newton football, which I mean, control the football, play defense, win games like 24-20, right? I really think there is. But where I say the boom or bust, first off, yes. I mean, I think, of course, Cam is talented. And I know Belichick and McDaniels, they are going to find ways to accentuate all the great things he does, and they'll build off it. You know, they'll get through training camp here, and after 1 week, they'll go, ooh, okay, he does this, this, and this well. Let's grow that out in our playbook. Ooh, he doesn't do this so good. Let's limit that. Now, the bust factor, though, Ahmed, for me is it's not going to be easy. First off, Jared Stidham's good. I know that, and I know that the New England Patriots think that as well. I think they were going into this throughout the majority of the offseason thinking he was going to be their starter, and that's what they were going to do, okay? But I guess where I get a little worried with Cam Newton here, and this is where I say the bust factor, and I'm going to go like 80 boom, 20 bust, okay? That's what I'm going to say. But the bust factor to me is Cam Newton, a part of a new culture and a place that he has never seen anything like this ever in his football life before. Is he going to be able to handle the day-to-day grind, detail, attention to detail, the expectations, people not telling him how great he is on a daily basis, you know, the influx of information and things he'll have to do at the line of scrimmage? It's going to be a different language for him learning things. You know, that's why we've seen guys like Albert Haynesworth and Chad Ochocinco and people like that go there and struggle and we never hear from them again. Now we know there's been other guys that go there and thrive and become superstars. So to me, that's where I put the boom factor. And then the fact that Cam Newton is just overwhelmed by the culture a little at first. Jarrett Stidham's been there. He knows the offense. And maybe, okay, that's where I could see a few falters from Cam Newton. But I think ultimately in my heart of hearts, I think we're going to see more boom here because I think Cam Newton is highly motivated. I think he is smart. I think New England's done their due diligence on this guy to know that he can fit there. And then ultimately, I think McDaniels and Belichick will whittle out the things he's not good at, like I said, and really just grow an offense around him that really suits him and suits the style of football they want to play. I'm sorry for the long answer, but I was all excited about this topic.
No, and I think, you know, if people say that this was the plan all along for the Patriots, I don't think that's correct, because you had no way of knowing that Cam Newton would fall in your lap, especially at the price that he was willing to finally accept there. And so I think it just shows, I think to your point, it shows that they were willing to wait and see if Cam was there late and maybe take a stab at him there, but they were confident to go with Jarrett Stidham if some other team was able to jump up and get him.
No doubt. And listen, I think we need to hit on that point. This wasn't like they thought about Cam Newton in early March and were like, let's lay in the weeds until early July and then we'll make it happen. No, this is something that kind of, from my understanding, festered throughout the offseason a little bit. There was some phone calls between the agent and the team and things like that. And I think it was something that Bill continued to think about and digest. And I think then they started to do their homework on Cam. What's the guy like? Does he work hard? Can he handle our, you know, mental grind of stuff we put in on our, in our offense on a daily basis? You know, so I think they started to do their due diligence there. And then listen, New England, I mean, again, I would, if you made me bet, I would bet New England had Cam Newton followed for 3 to 4 weeks. That's just the way New England works. I don't mean to be like creepy about it, but it's what I always heard they did with Randy Moss back in the day when they signed Randy Moss. From everything I know, they sent somebody out to watch Randy Moss every day. They watched him work out. They watched what he did in his life. And I think knowing New England, they probably did something like that again too. And then when they started to hear, wait, okay, wait, everything's checking out. Check the box, check the box, check the box. And then it was, he'll accept what kind of money to come play? Oh, okay, hold on. Mr. Kraft, hello, this is Bill Belichick. We've done our homework on Cam Newton, and he's willing to come here for like $1 million. It's like a steal. And I think when that all happened, then it started to come this perfect storm where it was like, okay, we've done our due diligence. Now this might become a reality.
And I think other teams could not wait that long, or they didn't want to wait that long. And that was always the danger. Like, you look at the Raiders, right? They spent more money on Marcus Mariota. If they could go back in time and redo it, I bet they'd rather have Cam Newton there if Cam would want to go and kind of compete with Derek Carr. But I think that was just the, every other team, you don't want to be left at the end without a guy. And so there's like, oh, we got to get a guy. Cam wants $25 million right now. We can't wait to see if his asking price goes down. Let's get Marcus Mariota or Case Keenum if you're the Browns. And so it makes sense from both areas. It's just that the Patriots were willing to wait and had a spot and are willing to take a chance on it. What do you think of Bill Belichick? The end of the question was, could this potentially be the best coaching season of Bill's career? I will say, I feel like this is maybe something that Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels would love to prove, is that they can have a successful team and a Super Bowl winning team without Tom Brady.
Well, of course. I mean, come on. We know that. We know Belichick and McDaniels want to shit on everybody and go, hey, it's us and not Brady. And we know Brady down in Tampa wants to shit on everybody and go, it's me and not Belichick or McDaniels. So that's understandable. I get that. You know, I don't think that New England will be consumed by that, though. They're just knowing those people up there and how they work, Ahmed, it's just do your job every day. It's not like, oh, what's Tom doing? Oh, let's look in the newspaper. Ooh, Tom did this. Now we need to do that. They're not going to be like that. They're just not. They're such a focused, detailed, unbelievable group that way. And, you know, honestly, like I said, this is where I think the beauty of this is. This is, think about how New England played last year, Amin. There's a lot of games. It's low scoring, playing through the defense, Brady kind of just managing the game and making a throw here or there. Okay. Cam Newton's capable of doing that, let alone you can do more around him as far as creativity and movement and things like that, to where, yeah, it's the number one defense in football. It's an O-line that I think played under its ability last year, and I think you'll see a bounce back there. And here's the other thing, too. First off, McDaniels, they have all these Cam Newton plays in their playbook, all right? That's the first thing I'd like to explain to everybody. New England's got the most extensive, deep playbook in the history of the NFL. It's never ending. And they have all the type of quarterback runs and things like that. They're in there, but they would be at a like wildcat formation where Sony Michel would do them. So, you know, between when Jacoby Brissett had a play a few years ago when Tom Brady had his 4-game suspension, between Josh McDaniels, you know, toying with a Tim Tebow idea in Denver, there is some stuff there to where they have a little background on how to play this style of football, let alone they have everything in their offense already. And then the last thing I would say, too, is, you know, when you think about Cam Newton in the backfield, split backs, it's Sony Michel and Damian Harris, who they drafted out of Alabama last year. And now you got N'Keal Harry and Julian Edelman and Mohamed Sanu. These are all guys that are like, you know, especially the receivers, you could be like this, Amin. He could be in the shotgun, fake to Damian Harris, fake to Sony Michel. Whoa, there goes Julian Edelman on a fake reverse, and now it's a play-action pass. The next play, it's fake to running backs, fake to running backs. Give the ball to Julian Edelman. It's a reverse. We've seen Julian Edelman throw the ball. We've seen Mohamed Sanu throw the ball. So I think you're going to see N'Keal Harry is an amazing receiver with the ball in his hand. So I think you're going to see a lot of movement, trickeration, misdirection, and, you know, along with that window dressing of the pure just power running game, and then the play action passes with Cam Newton, to where I look at that, and again, I'm sorry for the long answer, that's where I just go, this could be a special combination, and this is why I think he fits so well with their team and maybe the style of play in which they'll play in 2020.
Don't apologize for the long answers. You've been holding this all in your head for 3 weeks. It's got to all come out right now. It's kind of related to what Rafe Church 56 asked us. He said, do you expect most of Cam's rushing attempts to come from the read triple option plays or scrambles or design runs like a quarterback power? And what you're saying right there is all of it. You think they're going to try to dabble in all of it? Maybe.
I do. And I think they'll be smart too. They're not going to be like, you know, a kid in the candy store and be like, oh, it's Cam Newton, run him up the middle again, yeah. Josh, run him up. No, they'll do it the right way, to where he'll run the ball and then they'll have 5 or 6 plays off of that. And you'll have to at least respect it. And then they'll have another way where they have a design run play. You know, I think the bigger the game, the bigger the play within the game, that's when you'll see more of a chance of Cam Newton maybe carrying the ball up the middle and having to take a middle linebacker head on. But yes, I think it's all of that. And listen, who has been better at trick plays the last 20 years in the NFL football? I mean, you've heard me complain. I always go like, why is the team that dominates the league always have trick plays in the big moments? And yet the teams that can't ever like get to a big game, they're like, oh, we can't run that trick play. That's scary. I can't explain to people enough how extensive their playbook is and how many plays they have. And what I'm basically saying is these Cam Newton plays, they're in there. They were just on page 150. Now they're going to get moved up to like pages 20 and 25 in the playbook, to where it's going to be a little bit more of a staple of the offense.
And while they will be judicious and try not to overload too many running attempts for Cam Newton right away, I do think we may see Cam run as much, if not more, than he ever has in the past, just because he is on a 1 year deal, right? You don't have to worry about protecting him necessarily for 5-6 years. Now, maybe that's the plan. If he does well, you're going to want to retain him. But I mean, the reality is it's a 1 year deal for Cam Newton. Use him in 2020.
Well, I think there is some logic to that, certainly. And especially when you have a guy behind him in Jarrett Stidham, where you go, hey, we feel comfortable if he's got to play or do that either way. So I do get that. I think they will be aggressive with him, smartly aggressive. I think really the big thing is, and I think we're going to have a real clear picture, you know, by about 3 weeks, 4 weeks in the training camp, we'll start to hear like, is Cam Newton understanding the offense? Is he be able to digest this, you know, cryptic language that they have? This is the hardest offense in football. Don't make like, there's no doubt about it. There's more rules, different words, different meanings, things like that in this offense compared to any other offense in football. It's not even close. You know, it takes a little while to understand this. And I think they'll simplify it and make it easy for him and do their best that way. But like I said, I think we'll know pretty early on, like we did with Albert Haynesworth and Chad Ochocinco, where I think they were overwhelmed by the day-to-day details, the complexity and everything like that, to where we knew by like the end of training camps in some of those years, we were like, oh, this doesn't sound like this experiment is going in the right direction. And I think that's what you'll hear here with Cam Newton too.
It kind of touches on what Joe Yan asked about the calculus is what they've called that playbook for the Patriots. Right. But I want to get to one from One Love Zach Ryan. And you touched on Stidham a little bit already, but he goes, since Cam is on the Pats now, what's your long-term view on Jarrett Stidham? I know you were relatively high on him before. Can you see him as a starter 1 or 2 years down the road, or is it something longer and much less tangible now? That's an interesting question because you can kind of picture it, Chris, going a couple of different ways. I mean, if Cam is lights out, he's still young. What is he, 30, 31 years old?
Yeah,
he's
got 32, I think.
32. He's got plenty more good years ahead of him if he can come out in 2020 and prove that he can kind of be close to that Cam Newton of old.
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, listen, if Aaron Rodgers can sit on the bench for 3 years, then Jarrett Stidham can too. Jimmy Garoppolo sat on the bench for 4 years before he got a chance. You know, I think, like I said, they had all the intentions of the world throughout the offseason going in with Jarrett Stidham. I just think as they continued to do their homework on Cam Newton and then they realized that it wasn't going to be a financial burden to their football team, I think that kind of kicked the can down the road a little farther. They're like, whoa, we got to really think about this. And wait, why wouldn't we sign a Cam Newton, okay, with a guy who's he's proven, he's an MVP player, he's capable of carrying a team on his back, why wouldn't we sign him for that price and let him compete or have a chance to beat out a guy that, yeah, we like, but certainly is not Cam Newton or proven that he's capable of playing at the level Cam Newton has in the NFL. So they're going to buy themselves some time and they'll see where this goes with Cam Newton. They'll just see. And like you said, if he blows it out of the water and dominates football and they are awesome, he'll be back there and he'll be the starter. And Jarrett Stidham's just going to have to wait till Cam Newton gets hurt or, you know, maybe it'll be like a Jimmy Garoppolo type thing where he gets traded, you know, late in his contract to go be a starter somewhere else, something like that. Or this year doesn't work out to the way we think. And then New England could go, hey, Jarrett Stidham, you got to work behind Cam Newton. You got to work behind Tom Brady. You've had 2 years of practicing and work. Okay. And now you can take over the football team in year three. So to me, it's like a win-win situation for New England all the way around here.
So let me ask you, as we wrap it up here on Cam to the Patriots.
But I do like Stidham, just so everybody knows. Stidham
for
will
sure
be a starting quarterback in the NFL at some point. There's no doubt.
But even with Stidham, it was going to be hard. There were going to be some growing pains in year number one as the starter. So with Stidham, if you were assuming he was the starter, who did you have as the favorite in the AFC East?
I was going to give the Bills the slight edge, slightly. Like, I wasn't sitting here like, oh, the Bills will definitely win the AFC East. I go, I'm going to give them the edge. It's not easy not to pick New England. I don't care if Tom Brady's there or not. That defense is still there, and Belichick and McDaniels are still there, and that's scary. So, yeah, I'm giving the Bills the slight edge.
So now with Cam, are you sticking with that?
I am for now. I mean, okay, Cam at his best and he understands the offense and everything's great and, you know, hunky-dory and awesome. This is awesome. Then I'm going to switch and pick the Patriots. But can I But I need a little evidence of, like, I need to hear something through training camp and have a few weeks of practice and reps before I'm just going to go, oh, okay, now I'm definitely going to, you know, put the Cam Newton Patriots number one. Hey, if we get to like the end of August and we hear Cam Newton's running the number ones and he understands the offense and every day in practice is smooth and things like that, then Ahmed, yep, you ask me that again in the end of August, I'm going to go, oh, I think the Patriots are now my favorite. I feel good about that. So I don't mean to cop out of the question, but I just need a little evidence to see how things are going for Cam Newton, the Patriots, before I anoint them better than the Buffalo Bills.
Either way, it's going to be so fun to watch. I'm glad it happened because I cannot wait to see Cam Newton suit up for the Patriots.
I really wish, and I thought about this. I would love to at some point draw up plays and just show everybody how we could take one play for Cam Newton and how Josh McDaniels will be able to take one play of their offense and then have 20 other plays off of that one play that look similar to that play but have different window dressing and creative aspects of it. And that's where I think this is going to be really fun with New England and Cam Newton. Because like I was trying to explain with the fake run, the reverse pass, you know, they're going to have with the guys they have there who have a very versatile skill set to begin with. And now you got a quarterback with a versatile skill set and you got a play caller that's as versatile as any in football. That's where, you know, you could get magic here. And that's where I'm really excited about it.
Well, the Chiefs have magic with Patrick Mahomes as I make the transition to the guy. So he got $500 million, not all guaranteed, but that's what the contract says. Chris, are you upset that he did not get $1 billion because he is Patrick Mahomes?
I'm so like happy for Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, hey, listen, first off, it's a guy that anybody that's watched me or watched my old videos of Bleacher Report, I was from the point he was coming out in the draft going, he's the number one pick. This is the best player. He's going to be Aaron Rodgers. So I've been on this bandwagon for a while. And, you know, for him to get this type of money, but also I love that it's like one of the most team friendly deals we've ever seen, other than maybe Tom Brady. And what I would argue
most team friendly, $500 million.
Because you know what the deal is, Ahmed? The deal is a 5-year deal for $140 million. That's what the deal is when you really break it down. Now after that, Kansas City could cut him. Or he certainly could go back and be like, I want to be paid more because there's going to be no dead money effect or anything like that. But this is where this guy is special, right? I mean, I think you see it. I see it. You see it in interviews and the way he handles himself. He knows he's the man, but he's very humble about it. And he's got great leadership qualities. And I really believe that he wants to be the greatest quarterback of all time. And, you know, unfortunately, you can't be the greatest quarterback of all time unless you're somewhat near Brady's, you know, 6 Super Bowls in everybody's eyes. You know, that's not the case for me, but that's how people look at it. And he's willing to take less money and do something that he knows is going to benefit him professionally and benefit his team to where he's going to be very relevant. He's going to have a great supporting cast around him going into the future. And that's only going to make him and everything better in the lure of Patrick Mahomes and everything like that. And this is where I want to just, because people, I just want to set this straight too. I hear this a lot. Oh, like Brady. He's going to take a team-friendly deal like Brady. Like, listen, yeah, Brady didn't, like, drive the dagger into the New England Patriots and say, I want this. I know early in his career when he asked for money from New England, he said, I won't accept anything less than Peyton Manning. So he was always saying he wanted to be the highest paid. Where it got, I think, convoluted, right, is when we got to the early 2010s, 2011s, as I've said, Brady was not playing great football then. They forced Brady in a lot of ways to take less money. They basically said, here's the deal, take it or go find another team. And he just took it and was a good soldier about it. You know, this to me is truly Patrick Mahomes going, man, I could break the bank in so many different ways here. I got all the leverage. I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread in the NFL right now. And he decided to do what? I mean, $63 million guaranteed at signing, $10 million signing bonus, just a $10 million sweetener for this year, and then to make, you know, $22 million, $29 million, and then $40 million, And then 37 million. I mean, isn't that insane to you? To me, that's so friendly and good of him.
Some of it was a little give and take because, you know, Patrick Mahomes, they didn't need to give Patrick Mahomes the contract this year and not until after next year. And so I think, you know, not that the Chiefs would have wanted to make it a contentious relationship with Patrick Mahomes. They could have said, play out this year, play out next year. And then we'll talk about it. Mahomes could have held out at that point. So I do think there was a little give and take. And obviously Patrick Mahomes is in a different spot than Dak Prescott, who can just decide not to sign that long-term contract and play for $30 million still this year. So I think it's a little apples to oranges for people that are comparing those two deals. But I think you're right, Chris. I think from everything we know about Patrick Mahomes, and you see this with every other sport too, some baseball players that, you know, just give me the security. I really don't want to be the guy that's thinking year to year, okay, am I going to perform this year to get that bigger deal next year? Give me a five-year deal. Let's just know that we're going to be in bed together for the next 4 or 5 years, trying to win as many Super Bowls as we can, and let's go do it. Pay me fairly, and let's go do it. And I feel like from everything we've heard about Patrick Mahomes, that's his attitude. And I give him a lot of props for that because I think that's the way a lot of people think in their own careers.
Yeah, I agreed. I think you're spot on. I mean, I know I couldn't play that way, the way Dak Prescott or Kirk Cousins played back in the day, year to year. You know, first off, I learned my lesson. I was a guy that could have asked for more money, and then I lost my spleen, and I never saw that money. It's gone forever. But, yeah, you take the security because you never know what the hell can happen in this league. I mean, come on. Patrick Mahomes knows, I think, because – of one Thursday night that happened, you know, in the fall. It was a quarterback sneak, and his kneecap was on the side of his leg. And I think he realized, even though he knew he was okay about 20 minutes after that, I'm sure he had some moments there going, oh my gosh, is my career going to be ruined? Will I ever be the same? What's going on with me? And, you know, I'm sure that kind of hit home in a big way. And, hey, listen, you bring up the Dak Prescott thing. I would think that Dak Prescott and his agent were not happy to see this contract for Patrick Mahomes. I would think that this hurt their case for whatever they're asking for, you know. And, you know, I've heard numbers. You've heard me report them. People try to dispel them and tell me I'm wrong. But they don't ever seem to give me any details on what part I'm wrong about. And I bet you I'm not wrong. So screw off, everybody else.
So the Dak Prescott news could change by the time that we release this, because we're doing this before 4 o'clock and that deadline is 4 Eastern.
Way to cover our ass. Good job.
Yeah. So if we're wrong, there's a reason. It was bad luck on our part. But there are some tweets out there from Jane Slater, covers the NFL. One of them says, I'm told the final offer on the table for Dak Prescott is between 33 and 35 million annually, with over 100 million guaranteed. While there still have been no discussions between the two, the deal the Cowboys have presented ahead of tomorrow's deadline, per a source informed. Now, Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport have both tweeted earlier today here on what day is today? Wednesday. That Dak Prescott does not plan to sign a long-term extension. He'll play on that one-year franchise deal for over $30 million. And I'm trying to figure out, Chris, where you were so wrong, because all these reports out here are basically right. What you said a month ago when everyone said you were wrong, but now all the numbers are pretty much exactly what you said, including the fact that he doesn't want the fifth year and the Cowboys want that fifth year. Didn't you say that a long time ago, Chris?
Yes, I said that exactly. But, well, this is where, you know, again, this is where you got to connect the dots NFL style. You know, this is where I don't read between the lines and read the tea leaves. I read between the tea leaves. That's how in depth I go here. Okay. It's deep shit. Deep. Okay. But when I think about that, first off, I just go, well, okay. CAA is representing Dak Prescott. CAA represents Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport. So I would listen to them when they make a report on what Dak Prescott is going to do, because they're being told directly by his representation, is what I would say to you there. And then Jane Slater, I went to school with Jane. I know Jane well. Jane knows what the fuck she's talking about. I'm sorry to swear there, but she knows. And she's linked in with the Dallas Cowboys. So when she says things like that too, I perk up, because I listen to Jane Slater when it comes to that kind of stuff. She knows, whether that's through somebody in the Dallas or a player, I don't know what her connection is, but I know she knows. And yeah, I don't know where I was wrong either. I think I was really right, and it just pissed off, you know, maybe Dak Prescott's agent to where he just didn't like that I was so right. So we'll see.
We'll see how the final numbers end up shaking out there. But to finish up on Mahomes here, I got one from Roly Roly.
Yeah.
He says, why does no one dock Mahomes brownie points for having the best weapons in the league and an uber creative play caller? Seems like you'd feel the same way about him that you do with a guy like Tua Tagovailoa. So that's a fair point, because you do knock, you know, a guy like Drew Brees because he has Sean Payton. Andy Reid is up there with Sean Payton, if not the best offensive mind in football right now. How come you don't knock Mahomes for the same reasons?
Yeah, well, okay, it's great. First off, I think that is a very under-talked about talking point. You know, when we talk about other quarterback, I do think sometimes we just like, Mahomes has incredible supporting cast around him. There's no doubt about that. It's incredible, okay? But he makes them even better, too. And he is a guy that accentuates a guy like Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Sammy Watkins, because now Andy Reid can call plays that he wouldn't be able to call with Drew Brees or other quarterbacks, because he's going to go. And then you would go, man, Drew Brees is wasting Tyreek's talent. He can't even like get him the ball down the field. That stinks. So Andy Reid, because of Mahomes' talent, can therefore really optimize everybody else's talent within his offense. And it, hey, listen, I like Andy Reid and his offense. I don't think it's like on the same level as Sean Payton, Josh McDaniels, or Kyle Shanahan. I don't. I think those three, are in a little bit of a different stratosphere to me than Andy Reid. Andy Reid is great at window dressing, and he's great at being aggressive, okay? That's where Andy Reid is really special, and that's where it's awesome with Patrick Mahomes. And here's my last point to defend that, because, you know, again, if Patrick Mahomes was with Sean Payton, watch out. I mean, it wouldn't be fair. It would not be fair. It wouldn't, you know, especially if you had Tyreek Hill and things like that, along with that talent. If you could take Kansas City's talent and give him to Sean Payton or McDaniels or Shanahan, he would break records on a yearly basis. He would be like 60 touchdown passes and things like that. But here's my last thing. Okay, we talk about that and all these things. Yeah, Andy Reid is a good play caller, great game plan designer. He does have talent around him. Well, okay, I'm just going to get my stats here so I have this all ready to go, all right? But when it comes to, let's go back to 2018 the year Mahomes was drafted, right? I got that right? Or no, 2017, right? And so 2017, the number one rated quarterback in football was Alex Smith, quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, right? Yeah. Right, so Patrick Mahomes got to take over a really good number two seed AFC team with talent around him. But there's a difference, okay? It was great year by Alex Smith that year, great completion percentage, 26 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, led the league in quarterback rating. But the point, Ahmed, and what you hear me talk about all the time is what was there to be had? What was there to be taken advantage of? And Alex Smith, with all those great numbers, he left boatloads of touchdowns and yards on the field. Boatloads. And the next year, a guy who never played before doubled all those numbers, basically. So that just shows you, again, what his talent allowed that offense and the talent around him to be, to where that's where it's different. Patrick Mahomes, nobody in football could make that throw or play that we saw him make on 3rd and 15 in the Super Bowl. So to me, that's the difference when you talk about a guy like Tua or Drew Brees. No, they need the system to help them out. I could put Patrick Mahomes in any offense in football, and we would all, it wouldn't matter. We would still go, man, he might not be the best quarterback in football, but he's definitely top three. Okay. Yeah. And I can't say that same about some of the other guys we're talking about systematically. Sorry, again, it really, a long answer.
It really is amazing when you look at those numbers for 2018 for
you get it?
Mahomes.
Right.
I mean, 50 touchdowns. He was his quarterback.
5,000 yards.
Yeah, over 5,000 yards, just 12 interceptions. I mean, that was, man, that was ridiculous for Patrick
Mahomes.
First year as a starter.
So he threw for 24 more touchdowns and 1,000 more yards than the guy who was the number one rated quarterback on his team the year before. And they won a playoff game and went to the AFC Championship game and were, you know, 4 inches from a guy not being offsides to going to the Super Bowl in his first year as a starter, too. So, you know, yes, he is more than the system. This is one of the greatest individual talented players we've seen in the history of the game already.
One last thing on the Chiefs here from Grant Johnson 5. Does the Chiefs' huge investments in Chris Jones and Mahomes handicap them from re-signing Hill and Kelsey and open the door for teams like the Broncos to come out of the West sooner rather than later? So they did lock up Chris Jones as well to a big deal that is worth up to $85 million, $60 million guaranteed. So that was good for him. He came up huge, obviously, in the Super Bowl, big stopper on the defensive side of the football. And I think, Chris, the way they have these deals structured, you know, Jones is going to get a lot of his guaranteed money the first couple of years. And Mahomes is not necessarily getting it until year, you know, 3 and 4. That's when the big chunks come. So I feel like in the near term, it doesn't crush him too much. I don't know long term Hill and Kelsey, but I assume that they're smart people over there. They've thought about this stuff already.
No doubt. And they got two guys who didn't try to absolutely just, you know, hold their feet over a fire. You know, again, Mahomes is making $12 million this year, right? Or something like that. You know, next year he's making $29 million. That's nothing. You know, by the time he's making the big money, the cap should, I mean, we'll see what happens with the pandemic, but just everything we've seen here, you know, in the recent past, you know, this shouldn't even be a burden on their football team. And Jones, it's basically a 3-year, $60 million deal. And he could have asked for more. He could have. I mean, if you're asking me who I would rather have, Chris Jones or DeForest Buckner, I'm taking Chris Jones. I mean, Chris Jones, I think you could argue, and I'm dead serious about this. I mean, there's an argument to be made that he's the second best defensive player in football. I mean, I would give Aaron Donald the crown. I think Chris Jones surpassed Fletcher Cox and some other people the last year that I would have said were the second best in the sport, to where I think he's as dominant as a force as there is on a front seven in football. And he can move around and do a lot of different things. He's really special. And then, hey, they've got Tyreek locked up for a few more years, so they don't have to worry about that. Sammy Watkins is, you know, maybe the last year or two there, and he already took a pay cut. Okay, Travis Kelce, listen, he's going like this. It's coming towards the down arc of his career, so they're not going to have to break the bank for him again, you know, the next time around. Hopefully they'll pay him something respectable and because he's awesome, but – you know, I look at it from that standpoint, and then where they are always have a great advantage, Kansas City, and this is the Andy Reid factor, Ahmed, he's an unbelievable evaluator of offensive line talent, and nobody finds more hidden gems on the offensive line than Andy Reid throughout his years in Philadelphia now. So he always finds a good way of drafting those guys to never have to overpay any of them either. So that's where I think they're going to be fine, and I think you and I are going to be talking about Kansas City for a long, long time.
Yeah, and they seem like a bunch of good dudes, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah, they do, right?
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat. Protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You mentioned the offensive line. So let me go to something offensive line while I change the graphic here first. Look at this. I'm doing it all once again here. Woo, we really do need Nicole and Kristen to help us out, but from time to time, I can be trusted to change the graphics. This one comes from Injim Chow, who says, who is the best offensive lineman at each position on the line? So you mentioned Kansas City has got some good ones. They've pinpointed some talent. Were you prepared for this question, Chris? Are you ready to dive into your best offensive lineman?
I am. Pete sent me a text. Pete Demolitolitolitolitis up from his Lake House vacation, preparing me that this one might be on there. So, yeah, I got a pretty good feel, I think, for that question.
Let's go center first, then. Center first.
Center, there's some good ones. And I'm just going to throw out, like, you know, Mitch Morse, unbelievable. Rodney Hudson with the Raiders. You know, Matt Paradis, they're really good. But I think you're going to give me the best center in football. I'm taking Travis Kelce's brother, Jason Kelce, in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I am. You know, one, he's not like a road grader dominating type guy, right, Ahmed? But his guy never makes the tackle or the play. He understands how to cut a guy off or the angles of how to not let his guy make the tackle. And Ahmed, where he's really special is he can pull, like be a pulling guard out in space. He's the best in space interior offensive lineman in the NFL is what I would say. When you go screens or anything like that where the center is asked to move or get up to the second level, there's nobody better than Jason Kelce. So I'm going to pick him to be my center.
He is ranked number one for PFF, at least last year. Jason Kelce, just ahead of Ben Jones for the Titans.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Ryan Jensen from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, Jensen's a good one, too. And, you know, listen, Weston Richburg out in San Francisco is real good. He's been hurt. The center's important. When you got freaks like Aaron Donald and Fletcher Cox and Chris Jones, and they're coming at all shapes and sizes and speeds and everything like that, You better have a talented center if you want your offensive line to be good.
Guards. So who you taking at the guard position?
I think I'm going to go with the two Notre Dame boys.
You know, Quentin Nelson.
And Zach Martin, right? Zach Martin's a right guard, right? I mean, did I got that right? I mean, I'm just going off the top of my head. It just tells you.
In my offense, I interchange him. So I'll give you either way.
I mean, there's a lot of good guards in football. But I think those still – you know, this is really going into, like, Zach Martin's been the best guard in the game, you know, his whole career until Quentin Nelson got in the NFL. And I just think that relegated Zach Martin to be a number two. There's some good ones out there, but I'm going to take those two. I think they're the best there is right now.
Brandon Brooks, number one for PFF the Eagles.
Brandon Brooks is a beast. There's no doubt. He would be a guy that certainly would have been in that. You talk about a road grader. Yes, but okay. Give me some other ones. Who else is ranked up there?
Joe Tooney is five.
Yeah.
Marshall Yanda is four from last year. Roger Saffold, they got from the
Are my the two Spurs. Guys in the top five? Where are they at?
Yeah. Yep. Sorry. Yeah. Quentin Nelson, they had second last year, and Zach Martin third. So,
okay, right. Roger Saffold. All right. Thanks. But Roger Saffold, he is one that flies under the radar. You know, and yeah, he's super talented. And that's why you start to get into this. You start to realize, whoa, maybe that's why Tennessee ran the ball so well last year. We talked about their center, their guard, and we know their tackles were pretty good too. Right.
Funny how that works out, right? How teams that run the ball really well have some really good offensive linemen. That's weird how that seems to happen. All right, tackles. Who you got for your tackles?
I think my left tackle would be Ronnie Stanley in Baltimore. To me, Ronnie Stanley is the guy that I look at that's the best at both, right? Where he can dominate in the run game. And, of course, he is a premier pass-protecting left tackle. So I think he would be the guy, you know, hey, I like Laremy Tunsil a lot, but his run game blocking to me needs work as compared to a guy like Ronnie Stanley. I'm trying to think anybody else I'm missing. I mean, Trent Williams. If he's hitting on all cylinders, will be the best left tackle in football, even though he's taken a year off. I'm just thinking, anybody else I'm missing there? Bakhtiari, awesome, but I don't like – again, I think he needs more in the run game. He's a great pass protector.
So Ronnie Stanley for PFF was their second-ranked tackle last year. Number one, Ryan Ramczyk from the Saints.
Yeah. Well, and that's a right tackle. So he So we haven't gotten into right tackle, but Ramczyk or Lane Johnson are the two best right tackles in the game to me. And I don't know. I'd probably go with Ramczyk over Lane Johnson just because Ramczyk is a beast in the run game.
We've got Mitchell Schwartz too. You didn't give any love to any Chiefs after just saying they had had that great offensive line with Andy Reid pinpointing that talent. That's all right.
Who else? Any other names up there to the top there?
Anthony Costanzo from the Colts. Jason Peters, Lyle Collins.
Yeah.
Lane Johnson. So
yeah, right. Yeah, some big time names. There's some big time tackles, guards, everything like that. You know, the problem is it seems like a lot of them are all on the same team. They're all clustered together. And then you have other teams where you just want to go, like, you know, I could talk about the Rams and go, yeah, we know that Whitworth is there, but he's 79 years old now. Who the hell else is on that line? You know, there's some other offensive lines where you just go through and go, man, they got no names or no guy that's a physical dominant presence or anything like that. And I was just joking about that, Andrew Whitworth. I think you're awesome.
Pete chimed in here. Producer Pete Demolimolitis.
Yeah.
He goes, given how the game has changed in recent years with the great players rushing off the right side, how much do you value left tackle over right tackle now?
I don't, because, you know, it doesn't matter as much anymore to me. It doesn't. I mean, a tackle is a tackle. I think most of them can make a change to right, to left, to right. You know, I think that's possible. But the big thing is, you know, hey, if Pete, you and I sat down and we watched Khalil Mack or Von Miller or Chandler Jones or all the great pass rushers in football, right? You would start to realize and go, well, damn, they line up everywhere. I mean, it doesn't mean just because you're the left tackle and you're paying him a lot of money that they're going to put him over there. You know, right. No, I mean, Khalil Mack goes to the other side. They try to take advantage of matchups and things like that. So I don't look at it as being as important as far as left tackle to right tackle as much as I used to.
All right. Let's go to another big story that happened while you were on your long, long vacation. This one is Washington's got a new team name, or they will have a new team name very soon, which is good news to me because I have tried to avoid it for the past, you know, 3 or 4 years now. But then I always get screwed up because I say, you know, when I go, one team I'm looking at is the Washington. And then I go, oh, crap. Why did I say the instead of Washington? And now I have to say the Washington football team, or I just have to say the nickname. Totally jacked me up. Won't have that problem here soon because they're no longer that team name they've had for a long time, Chris.
Yeah, well, you know, get it the hell out of here. Let's go. Hurry up. I mean, what's taking so long here? Okay. I mean, you know, this is long overdue. We know that. And with the current circumstances of our country and everything that's going on, yeah, the time is now. Let's move on. Let's find something that is a little bit more of a, what do I want to say? You know, a nicer way to talk about Native Americans and the great things they've done for our country. It's like my dad, who I will say, he was one of the first people that was like, I'm done calling them the Redskins. I'm done. And he held true to it for a long, long time. And it's hard. You're right. But, you know, it's like he always said to me, he goes, I mean, Christopher, if you saw a Native American on the street, were you going to go up to him and go, hey, you Redskin? And no, you're not. That's disrespectful, mean, hurtful. That crap's got to end in our country. All of it. Get it out of here. I'm sick of all of it. I don't know. You're getting me to go on a real
thing
here, okay? Because I want to be like, I want the Confederate statues down. I want it all down. We need to start, like, bringing together our country and stop this divide all this time and the hate. And social media, of course, is definitely encouraging all of this. Yeah. But I'm glad that we're getting there. And I'm just interested to see where this whole thing in Washington goes right now, Ahmed, because I'm not the biggest Dan Snyder fan. I've been bitter at him ever since he screwed over the Shanahan family and the way he treated them there. And of course, they've been irrelevant for a long, long time. And they were one of my favorite organizations growing up. And this needs to be changed. And it sounds like he's in hot water. It sounds like there's going to be some breaking stories about him and his leadership here very soon.
Yeah, there's some rumors out there that Mike Florio even tweeted about maybe a big story coming out in the Washington Post. Again, we're taping this early, so that gives us an out if there's something more that's happened here that we don't know about. But
what, any names that you like or that jump out
to
you or anything?
So, yeah, that's what I was going to say to you. And by the way, the thing that your dad said is exactly the reason why I stopped saying it. I was like, man, I would never say that to a person. Right. Why am I going to use that? Why is that word going to come out of my my mouth? So the current odds right now, Pete compiled some of the current odds from some of the places out there. The favorite is Red Wolves is number one. Number two is Red Tails. I don't know if you're familiar. You saw that floating around social media.
Right.
I think that is a tip of the cap to an African-American a flight. They were in the Air Force, I believe. And I don't know the exact story with it, but seems to have a great logo associated with it as well. I got Warriors, Generals, Presidents, Lincoln's, Monuments, Memorials, Red Hawks is another one, Kings. I am kind of partial, Chris, to the red. I feel like red somehow should stick.
I hear you.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I like the Red Tails a lot. I'm with you there. That's the one, you know, from the very beginning, I think that was the one that jumped out to me. You know, so I'm in favor of that. I don't think you could do the Presidents and things like that, because as we're seeing, I think that might cause some problems too, you know? Yeah. So that's not possible.
What if that happens? What if they change it to something, and then in a year from now, we're like, oh man, that was bad. They got to change it again.
You got to change it again. We're going to go through this again.
Oops.
But I also like, you know, Red Hawks. I do. I'm with you. I want something red too. I want something that somehow fits into the tradition of them a little bit, or there's some correlation. I don't want just a total rebranding. To me, it's one of my favorite uniforms in football, as you know. Mm-hmm. I love the unique color combination of the burgundy and yellow and white and everything like that. So I would hope they can keep a lot of those things still alive there. And that would be exciting.
I'm all for this. I started to think about this a little bit more, and I think other teams should consider something. If there is, you know, a piece of the town or some history in the town that they're really proud about, and if your team name is the Wildcats or the Tigers, I don't know. I think you should seriously consider, you know, thinking of, all right, what makes our city, our area, our region unique, and maybe doing a little rebrand of their own. You've mentioned the Cincinnati Bengals could use a rebrand. I think that this got me thinking there are opportunities out there where teams can say, maybe we don't need to be the generic, you know, 10th Wildcat team out in the professional sports sphere. Maybe we can say something that is, you know, congruent with our city. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, there's no Bengal Tigers in Cincinnati. I mean, you're making my points for me. Exactly.
The zoo,
right.
Even at the zoo, I guess.
And there's no Tigers in Alabama either. The Auburn Tigers, I never understood that. Yet it's War Eagle. I'm always like, what the hell are they? Tigers or Eagles? What the hell are they? You know, same with LSU. I want to go like, there's no Tigers in LSU either. Let's find something that fits. So I think you are right. And I don't know, for the most part though, right, in the NFL, I think a lot – of the team names do have something to do with their area or culture for the most part. Is there anybody, you know, like, listen, I played for the Buccaneers. That's a real
thing.
That's
one.
Tampa,
yeah.
You know,
but I just thought about Bears, Lions, Panthers.
Yeah. Yeah. Really Bears. I can deal with. I think there's Bears in Illinois somewhere. I'm pretty sure with that. But the Lions, you know, they're second to me with the Bengals. Rebrand, change it all.
I can't argue.
Panthers, I don't know. Is there Panthers in that part of the country? I don't think there is.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe some teams just should think about a rebranding out there. All right, hey, Chris, we got a lot on this topic. The Madden quarterback rankings.
Ooh.
They released their quarterback rankings. Have you seen this, Chris?
I think I've seen some of it, yes.
Okay, so this one comes from M. Munning. He said, please quickly destroy the Madden quarterback rankings top 10. The homies would enjoy your take on the Ask Me Anything. So here's their top 10. It is, they had Mahomes number one at a 99 overall. He got the 99 ranking. You're not going to disagree with that at all.
No.
Right? And they did have Russell Wilson second with a 97. So you're in agreement so far. Then they had Lamar Jackson with a 94.
Sure.
Then they had Breeze with a 93.
Right.
Brady with a 90, and then it goes Rodgers, Ryan, Watson with an 86, Dak and Carson Wentz.
Yeah, well, so, you know, I disagree with him. Well, you know where I disagree with that. I mean, you know, to me, like, you know, the Brady Breeze rating are all, a lot of it's, you know, about the offense they were in and or the offense they're going to be in. You know, to me, that's where Madden's tough. It's hard to really, how do they make Russell Wilson, you know, that great? He's got to be, I mean, he's got to do it all himself to me. He doesn't have the system and everything else that goes along with it. So, listen, for video game, you know, fantasy, PFF ratings, I'm not trying to disrespect PFF. I love what they do. I certainly, you know, like to listen to their takes and how they evaluate things and all that. But it's all numbers relegated again. You know, again, you know, what I would argue with everybody out there is, you know, I could show you plays where nobody's open. It's the same play for Drew Brees, Tom Brady, and Deshaun Watson and Carson Wentz. It's the same play. Nobody's open on any of those plays. And I can promise you that the result for the Brady-Breeze play will be the worst of the group, because Wentz, Wilson, Watson, Mahomes, they're going to make something happen, move in the pocket, make some great throw, and EA Sports can't quantify that. There's no formula for that in their game. They can't put an algorithm in for that. So that's, to me, where I would shred that apart. That's where it's wrong. You know, again, that Patrick Mahomes completion percentages and Deshaun Watson would look a whole lot different if he got to play for Sean Payton and had Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara and one of the best offensive lines and all that. Now, like I've already said, you know, you put Brady or Breeze in Mahomes or Russell Wilson's offense, see ya, they're not who you think they are. That's not, especially not at this point in their career. So, yeah, I don't agree with that, but I guess that's how they have to make it happen to make those teams good and be successful. But those are ludicrous. They're ludicrous.
They don't want to get the backlash that you get on Twitter when you rank Brady and Breeze the 15th and 16th best quarterbacks in the NFL. They just don't want the blowback. They don't want to have to deal with that. And question for you, do you play Madden or does Philip play Madden? Have you bought the game?
I don't play anymore. I mean, I used to dominate Madden. I used to love playing.
Dominate.
I was the king. I used to keep record, you know, online play. I mean, I really did.
When?
All my old
teammates. When was that?
Really my whole life until I would say to like my little girl got to like my, I would say Charlotte got to like 6 or 7 and Philip was getting to 3 or 4. And they started grabbing the controller while I was playing and they wanted to play. And I was like, all right, I'm done. I'm like, that's it. I'm a dad. You guys have it. Go ahead. See you later. And I really haven't played ever since.
It's so much more difficult. It's so much more difficult when you become a parent to just go play video games for like 6 hours.
Yeah, right.
It really is. You know, you're right. Either they're grabbing the controller or your wife is yelling at you. Like, how could you be playing video games?
Right, exactly. Or the kids are yelling at you, Daddy, I want this. Daddy, I want that. And you're like, gosh, it's the fourth quarter. Mahomes is driving. Yeah. Okay.
And they go pause it. Like, I'm playing online. I can't pause it. You know, it's a live game.
Right.
Okay. So we debunked, we crushed those ratings. I like that.
I mean, I think we did. Again, that's to me, those ratings are predicated on their offense and talent that they're going to be around.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily in their history. Predicated on them.
Yeah.
Sure.
Breeze and Brady is just what they've done in the past, too, I think. 2020 quarterback leader. So this one comes from 30 over 100. He asks, which quarterback will lead the NFL in touchdowns and which quarterback will lead the NFL in interceptions? So who will lead in touchdowns? Who will lead in interceptions? So last year it was Jameis Winston leading in interceptions. Probably not going to happen this year. Won't play enough. I got to pull.
Yeah, last year Russell Wilson led in touchdown passes. Ooh. I mean, this to me, all right, I'm expecting monster year from Patrick Mahomes. You know, to me, it's just the perfect storm here. You know, this is when you look through history and see quarterbacks who've won Super Bowls in their first 2, 3, 4 years as an NFL starter. Mm-hmm. If they have some talent to go along with it, you know, the pressure's off. It's off, Ahmed. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing. He's got nothing more to answer. Now it's all about just let me go out and grow my legacy. You know, it's a lot like Russell Wilson, Brady, the same thing, Terry yeah. Bradshaw, Joe Montana, right? Just think about that. It's like you as this great announcer. If you got to, like, be the lead announcer for the Olympics and the Kentucky Derby,
yeah,
you know, and did that, you know, within your first or second year, you'd start to go, okay, I can do anything. I can put me on any show in sports and I'll lead yeah. the way, right? Well, think about that as a quarterback. You already go, man, I was down by 10 points in the fourth quarter with 6 minutes to go against the best, second best defense in football. And I still came out on top and we won the Super Bowl. And it's yeah. only year two for me as a starter. So to me, Mahomes is the guy that I'm going to go with to lead the league in touchdowns and yards.
So now, it was. So, but touchdowns, Lamar Jackson did have 36 touchdown passes last year.
So oh, he right. led I'm the on the league. Wrong yard. I'm sorry. I'm on the wrong year from before. My fault. My bad. Yep, I got
so,
you.
So, and then it was Jameis with 33, and then Russell Wilson had 31. So Lamar, I mean, right. Lamar 36, he's probably not going to get worse. He's going to be up there too.
I would think so, definitely. I would think also that the NFL will catch on to their offense a little bit, okay, to where that might just, you know, have a few more stale moments than we saw last year. But certainly I'm not counting out him or Dak Prescott, for that matter. With that talent yeah. he's got down there now and those receivers and that offensive line, they could all be, you know, that type of guy. The big question is, who's going to be the guy that – you know, leads the league in interceptions and does that type of stuff. And that to me is the tough one there.
So here's the thing. It's got to be a quarterback who's the starter, right? Going to play a lot, but won't lose his job quickly if he throws a lot of early interceptions. So he's got to have some job security.
Yes, I think you're right. I mean, listen, I know I sound like I'm a hater of this person, but the guy I think of here would be Jared Goff.
Wow, what a hater. What a hater of that person you are.
I can very easily see that. I know Baker Mayfield was second last year, and he can probably fit that mold of what you're talking about.
But he might lose his gig, right?
Right. He's got to be careful. It's a big year, and he's got a guy that's very competent behind him. So I don't think he's going to be benched or anything like that. It would take a disaster. But I believe in him. I think he's a guy that's going to go back to the drawing board and come back with vengeance this year. So, you know, I'm going to go with Jared Goff. I am.
What about Philip Rivers? He had 20 last year and new team. He's over. He's back with his buddies, Frank Reich, over at Indianapolis. But I don't know. And he is kind of the guy. I guess they could go back to Jacoby Brissett if it starts going sideways.
Yes, I thought about Philip Rivers. I think Philip Rivers, though, the fact that they have a better support system around them, a better offensive line, and I think the fact that he'll know that that's going to be a talking point for people, that, yeah, you threw 20 interceptions last year, he's going to realize, like, if that's the talking point again at the end of this next season, that'll be the end of his career. He won't be a starter again, and he'll probably have to retire. So I think he's smart enough to make those adjustments and not play careless football and know that he won't have to with the offensive team he has around him.
Let's get a few more in here. We got Jack Swam says, are the Ravens the most talented team in the NFL? Are the Ravens the most talented team in the NFL? So I think we're taking every position. I mean, they got a lot of studs on defense. You got one of the best quarterbacks in football. You got some speed guys on the outside and you got a good running game. They got talent.
They got talent. There's no doubt about that. I mean, I you know, listen, I look at them. I think you could still look at San Francisco and go, that's a talented team. We know Kansas City, very talented. New Orleans, the Dallas Cowboys, I think are a team that needs to be in that conversation again. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the Dallas Cowboys, if you put Bill Belichick or Sean Payton or Pete Carroll as the coach of the Dallas Cowboys, I think the results are different there the last few years. I do. Sorry, coaching is that important. But yeah, I think ultimately it probably is the Baltimore Ravens. I think I would agree with that assessment. I do. I think when you go, you know, again, I'm talking about the big uglies too. You know, that's important to me. And they got a lot of good big uglies on both sides of the ball. You know, linebacker was underwhelming to them, and they got the kid from Ohio State and the kid from LSU in the first round, Patrick Queen. And then I'm going to say it was Malik Harrison, the guy that linebacker. So I think, yes. And between that stable of backs, the tight end play, Hollywood Brown, you know, the receivers are not like superstars, but there's a lot of good, and Hollywood Brown has a chance to be a superstar. Yeah, I'm going to go with the Baltimore Ravens. I think that's a fair assessment. What about you? You got any thought there?
I mean, the 49ers are pretty talented.
They are.
You know, but you look at the quarterback position, I feel like if you're going to go most talented team, you've got to have like a top five talented quarterback being the most important position on the field. Yeah, you know what I think of Matt Judon over on the defensive side. You got a good offensive line. It's just like there's almost no weaknesses. Either the kicking game, it's just right. Like this is around the whole 53-man roster. It's just like, wow, there's talent everywhere. So I would
no doubt.
I'd agree with you. I'd agree with Jack Swam that the Ravens.
What
are
up,
the most
Jack Swam?
In the NFL. Let's go to Raising More Than Cain. He says, huge fan of the pod, literally and figuratively. When is it okay, appropriate to switch fandoms? The Packers royally pissed me off with their draft in 2020, and I'm looking to root for a new team. So he wants to know, is it okay?
He is
a fan of the Packers, but he doesn't think he wants to be anymore. Is it okay for him to drop them?
Well, let's ride it out, and I'm going to put one of my ear things in here.
Okay.
Like, and who was this? Who was this that said this?
This is Raising More Than Cain.
Raising More Than Cain. I hope we're talking about cane sugar when we're talking about More Than Cain. I don't know. But either way, yeah, we don't know. You know, when you're part of the homies, who knows?
Yeah.
What the hell were we just talking about? I totally lost my train of thought.
Can you drive? Can you drop a T? Can you be a fan of a team and then ditch them and then pick a new team?
Hey, let's to my guy here, I would say, let's ride it out with the Packers as long as Aaron Rodgers is there. Okay. Let's do that. I'm pissed off at the Packers too, you know, and I will be. I'm kind of hoping for Aaron Rodgers to have a huge year this year and, you know, crap all over their organizational plans and then ask for a trade. That's what I'm really hoping for that in a lot of ways. It kind of pissed me off too. So what I would tell my buddy is let's ride it out with Rodgers. And then when he leaves from this screwing over, we can make the appropriate change to a new football team.
You follow Rodgers wherever he goes. That's your new favorite team.
You don't have to follow Rodgers, but let's let him leave the Packers, and then you can go to whatever team you want. We can follow Rodgers if you want. You don't have to.
Could go to the Vikings or something weird like that, like the Favre thing, and so that would make it tough. That's true.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to go to the 49ers section. We got a couple on the 49ers here. Let's do them both real quick. Ryan Sodora says, what are your thoughts on the Raheem Mostert trade demand? He wants out. He wants out of San Francisco.
Yeah, I think he's, he got a new deal last year.
He did.
And
3 years, I think $9 million.
Right. He got paid like a really good backup running back, special teams expertise type of guy. That's what he was paid for. I would tell him, you know, and first off, I know this is a guy that Kyle Shanahan loves. Like, this is one of his favorite players on the football team. I hope Kyle doesn't get mad at me for saying that, actually. But I know that's the truth. And I would tell Raheem Mostert, don't request a trade. Don't do it. You know, I would tell him, call Kyle Shanahan. Tell him your concerns and issues. Talk to Kyle. Kyle's the most honest, real dude, real talking coach in football. I mean, come on. He was sitting there telling Jimmy Garoppolo that they were flirting with Tom Brady and everything like that. If that doesn't tell you how honest they are, I don't know what does. So that's what I would tell Raheem Mostert. And I would say, be careful, man. I mean, you are who you are right now because of Kyle Shanahan and that special running system they have there. And as we've seen through the Shanahan's history, and Kyle, he can run the ball with anybody at running back. Now, Raheem Mostert, he's better than anybody. I'm not trying to like to relegate him to averageness. No, he's special, and his skill set fits that Shanahan running style. But I would tell him, you know, hey, be careful what you wish for. You end up getting traded. You'll be down in Miami, or, you know, not Miami because they already got Breida, but some other place where you just go, holy cow, I can't get a hole or to run through or anything. Right. So that would be my advice to Raheem Mozart. Call Kyle Shanahan, tell him your concerns, have a conversation, and hopefully they can work something out.
Yeah, speaking of Kyle, this one comes from All Happy Teams. He says, Kyle is your friend, but he's a head coach now. So why does he allow his coordinator to run the Seattle defense? Why haven't you been able to talk him out of that, Chris?
I've made a few comments. I won't lie. I have made a few comments, yes. I mean, Kyle has his reasons. I'm not going to get into, you know, personal conversations between me and Kyle, certainly. But, you know, this person here, they know this is something I've been banging the table on for a lot of years. You know, there's just too many teams in football that run the system. It's not creative enough.
Right.
You know,
so what are the reasons in support of it? Like, what, let's play devil's advocate here. So it's a simple system that you feel like your players can be interchangeable more and can learn it and can not mess it up.
And like you said, the simpleness allows them to play fast and there's never a mess up, right? It's just like, wait, this is my rule. I got this gap. I just got to worry about this gap. Oh, there's somebody, fly up there, make the tackle. So it allows them to play without thinking. And you watch the 49ers all year. I mean, their defense looked like one of the fastest defenses in football, right? Because there's never like, he went in motion. Hey, check ripple, you know, like all these different things that go on. Sometimes hamstring players, because now they're like, wait, we changed the defense. Wait, said Hunt, what's my rule? And they're thinking about the rule as the quarterback's dropping back to pass. So that's really the thinking within that, to allow your defense to play fast and aggressive. And listen, they have talent there, so they can get away with it. But my big thing is, when you don't have talent and you play that defensive scheme, like we've seen Seattle the last few years, it can get torn apart. It's too easy. The quarterback walks to the line of scrimmage every play. It's the same coverage. It's the same look. There's nothing different. Now, the other reason I think guys like it, and a guy like Kyle Shanahan likes it too, is, you know, when you run the same system all the time and what you do and all that too, what happens is they know where they're vulnerable as well, right? Hmm. You know, you start to realize, teams are always doing this to us. When we play, you know, they're always doing this combination of routes or this. They call them Seattle beaters in the NFL. Well, because these defenses see it so much, they also are ready for that too. The things that they know that, you know, schematically put stress on their defense. But I think ultimately the biggest thing is something you said. It's about not being, having too much, not messing up, being about allowed to play fast and things like that. And I think that's why a lot of coaches like it, but it's changing. And I will continue to say this on TV, so my buddy Kyle Shanahan hears it, and he's heard me say it on the phone before too. But you're seeing big moments in football. You better have a versatile defense. I mean, just too many years in a row, I see the Seattle defense fizzle out in big moments, whether it's Seattle in the Super Bowl, whether it's the Atlanta Falcons up 28-3 in the Super Bowl, whether it's the Jacksonville Jaguars up 20-10 in the AFC Championship game, you can go. Am I there? Good?
You're back.
You got me?
You're back. I missed the last part. The last part of what you said. Oh, see, that's what this. We never anticipated this. We're like, we'll work from home. It's easy. What about when your mom calls and you're broadcasting from your iPad? It's just no one ever thought of that before.
Or the 49ers up 20-10 in the Super Bowl. Right.
Yeah.
Ahmed, how many examples have I just given you of that defense not being able to hold the lead against a good team and quarterback and everything like that? That's, to me, what I will continue to argue with my friend. The Kansas City Chiefs, they're not as talented as the 49ers are on defense. But at the end of the game, like, Jimmy Garoppolo walked in the line of scrimmage and he was like, whoa, I don't know what the hell they're doing here. Like, what the hell defense is this? What blitz is this? That's what the Baltimore Ravens do. That's, of course, what the New England Patriots do. You know, to me, You just can't be predictable this day and age in the NFL with as good as the offensive systems are. And, of course, the quarterbacks and receivers as good as we've ever seen in this league.
Let's do two more, and one is with Seattle. We were just talking about them with their defense, but what about their offense? This one comes from Michael Monroe. He says, if the Seahawks do sign Antonio Brown and he can play and he keeps his act together, I added that part, do you think the Hawks will finally open up the playbook for Russell Wilson? So do you think if they can get Antonio Brown, I don't know what the chances of that happening are, but they would actually help out Wilson by opening up the playbook.
There's no chance they're getting Antonio Brown, and there's no chance Antonio Brown's going to be in the NFL in 2020. Okay, that would just be my first assessment of that. I mean, again, I don't know if you saw the news with Antonio Brown yesterday, but he's still having issues with his lawsuit and, the defamation of property. So, yeah, there's all that going on, and he's basically gone off the radar on that. And now, whatever, it's become a debacle. So it's just more evidence that a team's going to go, why would I want to deal with this and this guy, let alone the league hasn't allowed him back in yet. So I don't think there's any way. Now, you've heard me say when I did my quarterback rankings and everything like that, they need to start playing through Russell Wilson more in Seattle. They do. Mm-hmm. There's just too many games where it's, they've kind of dominated the game, and you look up in the fourth quarter and you go, what? They're down 20-17? Why? Oh, that's right, because they've run the ball like 27 out of the last 34 plays for no reason, for 27 yards.
No, establish the running game. Establish the running game. That's what you got to do, even if it's just half
a
yard.
Yeah, well, tell me how they feel about that, after the last two playoff losses where they tried to establish the running game, and then it became the fourth quarter, and they were down by 10 points, and it's like, oh, Russell, save us, Russell.
Screw the running game at that point. Screw the running game. Don't worry about it at that point, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, they have to play through him more. They need to grow their offense more to be able to play that way, too. The offense is too predicated on Russell having to make the big play and throw too much. They don't give him enough silver platter completions and easy completions to me. If they did that and had a few other just cheap ways to get quick throws, short throws, things like that, then if they do that with the normal meat and potatoes of their offense, it could be somewhat cutting edge and it could be scary. But with that defense up there, it hasn't gotten any better this offseason. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sitting here going, oh, they're going to make the jump back in the top 10. Like, they can't play the way they were playing in 2014 anymore. That's got to change. They've got their defense is not going to be able to hold the better quarterbacks and the better offenses in football in check in big moments, just like we saw last year. Garoppolo was big against them late in the year. Of course, we saw Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs. They had troubles against – Jameis Winston and the Buccaneers too. So it's that defensive system I don't like. But play through Russell. Sorry, I'm rambling.
The last one, Chris. No, it's okay. Last one. This is the most crucial one. This one comes from Chandler Pickett. He says, mascot fight Pro Bowl, AFC versus NFC. Who wins? Who are the captains? Who is the MVP? So we got the mascots of all the teams now. Washington at a disadvantage. They are so the NFC is down a mascot right now. But if you look at all the team names here,
they're out of it.
Who are you scared of the most here? Which is the most fierce mascot in football in the NFL right now?
Well, I mean, anybody with a gun or a sword is scary, right? So, yeah,
that's what I was going to say. I was going to say any human. I'm going to put my money on any human here because I feel like they're going to be able to figure out a way to outsmart the animal. You're right, especially if they're a patriot and have a gun or what do Vikings have? Do they have axes and swords and stuff? It's like that's going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, pickaxes. Right. Yeah. It's going to be very tough to beat. Yeah, I don't, hey, listen, like the Houston Texan, I guess, is that a big bull or whatever? That's great. But when he runs at the Patriot and the guy pulls his musket out and shoots him, he wins. So it's hard to go against that.
Here's one.
I think the ones I look at more than anything. And
what about this one? What about a Saint? Who's going to say? No, that's bad mojo.
Am I serious here? I think this is like real life. I think it's the Patriots. I really do. I mean, I mean, he's a patriot. We know he's got great courage. Okay. He's willing to stand up and fight the revolution. He obviously can ride a horse. He's a pretty smart guy, it seems like, the patriot. And then, of course, he's got a gun to go with it. So I think that would probably be my pick. What about you?
But what about the Buccaneer, though? The Buccaneer may cheat. You know, it's always going to be who's going to break the rules. Who's going to bend the rules a little bit more? The Raider is going to do that. The Viking may do that. And the Buccaneer. So I don't know. Is the Patriot almost too – he's just – you know, he's too much of a rule follower that he won't be brutal enough.
Are you hearing me right now? Because I can't hear you.
Oh yeah, we've lost Chris. My final plea here.
I lost your. Ooh.
And I'm back now. Can you hear me now?
Gotcha.
Okay.
Look at you.
My final point.
What'd you
Chris,
say there? I didn't see. Yeah. I didn't hear it all. Go ahead.
See, my final point was that the Buccaneer, that I feel like the Patriot as a human would be tough, but the Buccaneer may break the rules along with the Raider, along with a Viking. And so you've got to factor in the fact that maybe these other humans are going to be nastier than the Patriot.
I think there's a very good chance they could be nastier, but the Patriot has brains. Okay. Yeah. You know, those Raiders, those Buccaneers, you know, I don't know how educated they are. You know what I mean? You know, I just don't know. They might not know about military tactics and things like that. They just kind of a raw street fighter type of group. So, you know, the Vikings scary, but I don't know. I think I'm going with the Patriot, man. I can't even believe that. I didn't hash that out at all in my mind before this podcast. So that's a good one. You know, we can't forget about the Chargers too. Lightning's pretty legit. Like that'll kill you in a heartbeat.
Yeah, that is true. Although people have survived it. And so it's like, you kind of got to question the toughness of Lightning sometimes because there have been people that have been okay after they got hit.
Well, yeah. And then I also, that brings you to the Saint conversation too. Like, I don't know. Can a Saint stop the Patriot bullet? Or can he actually get Lightning to strike the Patriot, the Saint? I don't know.
Well, if you kill a Saint, then don't you have eternal damnation? And that might, you may have lost because of that. Like there's questions to contemplate here. And I do feel like this has sparked a debate that the homies will have, and we probably have to have a bracket now, a tournament of mascots fighting.
I'm down for that.
I'm down.
Let Washington pick their name first so we can get them in here, and then we'll go from there. But I like that. Yeah, I mean, you know, I love the animals, you know that, but I mean, come on. I don't know. A falcon, an eagle, a seahawk.
What's a titan? What would that be?
Just a big man with a big sword is what I picture. I don't know what the hell a Titan is. There'd be another one of your teams that probably needs a rebranding and going with something that has to do with their city. There you go.
Yeah. Yep. Music City. All right, Chris. I think
we did it.
We've gone through, and we didn't even get through all of them. There are a lot of questions here from the homies, so we're going to have to do this again, which luckily we are back Mondays and Thursdays now. Right, Chris?
Mondays and Thursdays, baby. Glad to be back. Let's get back in the swing of things. Let's keep our fingers crossed that we're going to have NFL football.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm very scared. But it sounds like they're going with the status quo. And just like we hear with like our hospital system, I think as long as the teams can manage this and not be overburdened, right, where it's like you got 20 guys that have COVID or 25 guys, if they can keep it into four guys on the team, five guys on the team, and not let it spread, I think we'll have a chance to play some football this year. So I'm very hopeful for that.
Me too. The testing. I feel like if you can test enough throughout the week, it doesn't take tests away from us normal Americans too. I feel like there's a way out of it. I'm at least hoping there is.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. All right, you the man. That's it for Chris Sims Unbuttoned. You'll see me and Ahmed back behind the mic on Monday for Chris Sims Unbuttoned podcast. Like he said, it's Monday, Thursday here on out. Pro Football Talk. I'll be on there with Florio starting Monday morning, 7 to 9 a.m. And then a little PFP OT after it. Yep, I got to deal with that asshole again. So here we go. But everybody be good out there. Have a good rest of your week. Peace out.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.